Hello.
Hi, Mr. Smith.
Yes, hi.
Hi, it's Rick from WTOP. How you doing?
Rick, how you doing?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good.
Well, first of all, thanks a lot for talking to me. And
of course.
All right. Well, first off, tell me, this show you're doing is called Masters of the Telecaster. Can you tell me, like, what specifically it is about the Telecaster? Because I there are not a lot of guitars that get that kind of first name basis sort of thing. If you say
right. Anyway. Well, the Fender Telecaster was the first commercially produced solid body electric guitar. So in other words, it wasn't hollow, you know, like old-time
right.
guitars. It was plank of wood. And at some point in 1949, Leo Fender and his partner, Doc Kaufman, went down to the lumber yard, bought some pine, brought it home, glued it together, and cut out that shape, put a neck on it, and went, oh, this is good. And they were able to, you know, mass produce it. And it caught on right away. Also, the electronics were great that Leo Fender had designed. So, that's why the Telecaster caught on like that.
Okay, but like, what do you get out of it nowadays, as opposed to a Strat or a Les Paul or something?
When I was 11, my mother bought me a used Fender Telecaster, and I've had that. I still have that guitar. I'll be playing it at the show. So I've had that guitar for 55 years since 1963. You know. So it's kind of like what I learned to be me on. So to me, it's everything. I made my whole career and living and stuff playing that guitar.
Mm. What was it that inspired you to start playing? I mean, for a lot of people, it's the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, but obviously, you predate that, I guess.
Yeah. When I was a little kid, when I was four, I went down in the basement with my mom. She was going down to do the laundry. And I said, what's that thing hanging on the wall? She said, oh, that's a guitar. It belonged to my Uncle George at one point, who I'm named after. And I said, oh, can I have it? She said, sure. Takes it down. It was an old Beater acoustic from the 30s, you know, collegiate brand. And I just got obsessed with it. I got fascinated by watching the strings vibrate and that it made the sound, you know, and that was it. From then on, I was just obsessed. And then when I was like seven, another family friend loaned me a good guitar, a Martin, and gave me some lessons, and I was on my way.
There you go. Tell me a bit more about the show. Have you done this exact thing with these guys before?
Yes, we've been doing this for a while, and we really have fun. Jim Weider, it was his idea, and the name was his idea. I would never call myself a master of anything, but I try to see the irony in the name, you know. But Jim came up with the idea that me and him would be the basis of it. And then in different places, you know, we would try to get somebody from the area who also played a Telecaster and get them to play with us. So that's what we do.
Okay. And what, you know, I mean, this is, you know, from what I've been able to see about the gigs you play routinely, it's a bit of a different thing than some of the bigger name acts you've done before. Do you get something different out of playing at a place like City Winery?
Yeah. When I'm playing with somebody else, you know, whoever that may be, Bob Dylan or, you know, Roger Waters or something, I'm playing their music and I'm working for them and I'm in service of the song that they're doing. With this, because it's our thing, you know, I can stretch out, and this is all about, I mean, we try to pick good songs, you know, do good songs, but it's about playing. It's about making hopefully good music and really stretching out on the guitars.
Mm. And you can do that. I mean, you still have to serve the song, I'm sure.
You serve the song. That's always my thing. You know, that's why I've always loved playing with other people. I always I never really wanted to be the front man. You know, I wanted to be a side man. I always admired guys like James Burton, you know, that would just play with different people. You know, when I would watch Elvis Presley on TV or something, I'd watch James play. You know, I thought Elvis was great, but I would watch James Burton. When I'd watch the Stones, I'd watch Keith. You know, I'd watch Mick Taylor. You know, I always liked that side man role.
What exactly about it is the?
Maybe it's just less pressure. I don't know. It's to me, it is always about the song. And I love to play with good singers, and I've been very fortunate to get to play with some really good singers along the way, Daryl Hall, people like that. And then when you hear the vocal melody, it always inspires me. It tells me what to play. You know, it just I hear the vocal and I know, oh, okay, yeah, that. Now you want to play that kind of thing behind there. And, you know, I was lucky that I came up playing in bar bands. You know, I came up through the bars for many years, so I learned hundreds of top 40 songs, learned how to play them, you know, just like the record. We would always say, you got to play it just like the record, you know, and that's how it was to play in the bars back in the 60s and 70s. And that was a great school for me.
I mean, I'm sure it gets you, it gets you to the point where you can play anything.
It certainly, if you pay attention, it helps train your ear. There's a thing musicians say, you know, they say, well, you got to have big ears. And that means you got to hear everything. When I sometimes teach, I go to Yorma Calkin and have this place in southeastern Ohio called Fur Peace Ranch. And I go teach there. And I always tell my students, when you go home, I want you to get on YouTube and learn a song that you don't like. Force yourself to figure out a song that you don't like. Because you learn something. Then, of course, you learn a bunch of stuff that you do like, and that's inspirational. But you have to listen to everything. You know, you have to hear whatever's playing on the car radio, whatever's playing in the market while you're waiting to pay for your food, you know, whatever's coming out of the ceiling. Listen. Always listen. Got to have big ears.
Yep, you can get something out of anything.
Yeah, you really can. If you pay attention, there's always music going on somewhere.
Mm-hmm. What else have you got going on these days?
All kinds of things. With my wife, Taylor Barton, she has come up with this idea that we've been doing that we call G.E. Smith's Portraits. And I've done a bunch of different shows, and we'll get somebody, like we had Ethan Hawke did one of the early ones, you know, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
He also plays guitar and sings. He's quite good. So we did music, you know, and it's music, of course, but it's also conversation. I try to make it so that it's like as if I was sitting in the living room with whoever the artist is that's on the show. And we'll play a song and we'll talk about it. We'll play two songs. We'll play a part of a song. You'll all remember that old song and you play a little bit of it. And you talk about stuff. So it's not a straight interview. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a real conversation. So we did Ethan, Kevin Bacon. Him and his brother Michael have the Bacon Brothers Band. We did them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually did one with Roger Waters, the only solo show he's ever done. People came from South America to this little 300-seat theater to see it. Billy Squire.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I did the one with Billy, then now we've been actually going around and playing, just me and him, but electric guitar and slamming and playing his big rock songs, you know, and it sounds great. We really had a good time. But just the two electric guitars, no drums, no bass. Got one coming up with Richard Thompson in a couple of weeks, the Portraits show. Right. And I'm really excited about that because
he's amazing.
Major influence on me and somebody whose music I really, really love.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're finding, you're going out and finding people to be a sideman for. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, that's great. You know what? You know, I imagine, you know, the big ears really came in handy on the Saturday Night Live band, I assume. What was, I mean, that must have been, I mean, I've done some live shows with about, you know, 1/1000th as many people listening. And the pressure and the chaos must have been really something.
Well, you know, people often ask me, they say, well, when you go out and play in front of 25,000 people, aren't you nervous? I say, no. When I put that guitar on, that's the only time I'm not nervous. The rest of the time, when I don't have the guitar, then I'm nervous. You know, just walking around in life, I'm nervous. But when I put the guitar on, I'm comfortable. I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
So on Saturday night, that was great experience for me to play with the level of musicians that were in that band. I mean, they were all real musicians. You know, and I'm this bar band guy. And I come in. I learned so much playing with them, the horn players and the keyboard players, just great people. You know, very few people could afford that band. It took a corporation like NBC, you know, to be able to pay all those guys because they're the top New York, you know, jazzers and just great, great people, great musicians. That was wonderful. I was there for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Had a great time.
Yeah. I mean, were there any particular people you played behind who you just knocked you out that you didn't expect?
Not so much that I didn't expect it. It was great. You know, I got to play a couple times with Al Green. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Al Green. Come on, and I'm playing with him. That was fantastic. And then all the bands that would be on, you know, the guest band. To be able to work with them, and because I was a musical director on the show too, you know, so I actually got to talk to them, and,
right?
Work with them for the staging and stuff, and you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were always so good, such a good band, you know, a real band, guys that could get up there and play and sound great every time. And I was there during that like early '90s, you know, so Nirvana was on, Pearl Jam. People like that. Very exciting. And it was just amazing. You know, week after week, somebody great would be on. I got to play with Annie Lennox, Elvis Costello. You know?
Yeah.
Like a dream.
Yeah. And I mean, did you think about the fact that you were on camera?
Well, after a while, not really, no. You know, at first, sure. But then after a while, it was just, you know, you're doing your job. I did 220-some shows.
Yeah.
So like anything else, you know, you get used to that aspect of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're aware of it. You're aware that you know, you have to be concise in your movement, you know, on camera. You can't go flailing all over the place because you'll go out of frame, you know? So you think about stuff like that, but once you sort of internalize that, then no, you just play.
Yeah.
Just try to play good.
Yeah. I imagine, I mean, there are millions of people watching on TV, but as far as how many people are in the theater, it's actually a pretty small show, right?
Yeah, less than 200.
Yeah. So that's got to be a bit more comfortable, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, you get used to it, and it was... like any work environment, you know, you know everybody. I knew all the cameramen and the tech guys and stuff, and we would joke around about stuff and just generally have a pretty good time.
Yeah. Now, when you've played with somebody like Hall & Oates, I mean, when you are playing in front of 25,000 people, I imagine you don't. I can imagine you don't get nervous, but how do you feel?
Well, it's fun, it's exciting, it's exhilarating. You know, to go out, like, well, I was lucky when I was with Daryl and John. I mean, I was a young man then, you know, I was in my 20s when I started with them. And they were just coming into the period when they got huge, you know. So we went from playing kind of small places to just playing the biggest places all over the world for 6 years while I was with him. So that was very exciting for me,
mm-hmm.
as you might imagine. And then even like with Roger Waters, I played with him from 2010 until about a year and a half ago on the Wall tour, you know. And we went all around the world a couple times. And on that, every night when we first came on stage, we'd set, you know, we'd come out and set in our spots. And we got our little earphones on, and there's a countdown, 30 seconds, 20 seconds, so we're all ready to hit the first song. And I'd look out in the audience, and Roger played the big audiences. We'd have 60,000. You know, we played stadium.
Yeah.
And I'd say to myself, okay, this is real. You're really here, but don't get used to it because it's not real. You're not really here, you know, like that. You can't take yourself too seriously or you go insane.
Yeah, I'm sure. How did you meet up with Roger Waters? How'd that happen?
He lived near where I live, out on Long Island.
Okay.
And our wives knew each other. And through that, then we started having dinner a few times.
Mm-hmm. Are you?
That was.
Yeah. Do you have, in addition to your wife, are you, do you have any, sidemen engagements coming up, or are you looking for them?
I'm not specifically looking. I was never like a real ambitious guy, you know, stuff. I was lucky, you know, I would get a call. One thing would end and something else would pick up. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what comes along. Something always comes up.
I imagine so, but I imagine your attitude has something to do with that.
I don't know. I've always been lucky. I've been very lucky.
Yeah,
I know that.
Well, all right. Well. Thank you very much. And
great.
Yeah, I will. I will see you Saturday, and hopefully, we get to say hi.
Good deal. Yeah, please come say hi.
All right, I will. Thanks much.
All right. Take care.